Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
And this is Dwight Schultz filling in for Dr. Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. I know you're disappointed. I would be too if I were listening and suddenly this strange voice comes on. And I didn't want that. I wanted to listen to Dr. Michael Savage. What the hell is going on? Well, I'm a fill-in. My name is Dwight Schultz. I'm a professional actor. I have been for over 40 years. Well, I keep saying over 40 years, well over 41. Even longer than that. And I'm still working, which means I'm not dead yet. I'm not a Gaddafi. Gaddafi, you could say whatever you want. What a horrible thing that was. But anyway, I'm best known as Howling Mad Murdoch on television's The A-Team, Barclay in Star Trek, The Next Generation and Voyager, and the motion picture First Contact. A lot of films, a lot of television, a lot of theater. I'm well-versed in the theatrical arts. Yes, let me be honest if I have to. If I have to be honest, and as a talk show host, after all, I mean, let's face it, there is now the Supreme Court is going to decide whether or not you can pretend to be in the United States military with honors. Whether you can actually say, the Supreme Court is going to decide whether or not you can lie about your life vis-a-vis the United States military. So I'm an actor. Why can't I lie about what I've done as an actor? I've won 10 Academy Awards. And I've been a mime in San Francisco. No. All right? Listen, I am a mime. I did it. I actually did it. And I had a lot of fun doing it. And let me tell you, all this breakdancing, all this stuff you see today was all Marcel Marceau, Tony Montanaro, Etienne de Crew all did it first. Only they did it with the French accent. They said, boom, 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 boom. They didn't need those beats. They didn't need it. But anyway, I did that too. I did it all, folks. I have. My body's broken. I have body parts replaced. You can't believe it. But I did it. I know show business in and out, and I've been an aficionado of talk show hosts since I was about 13, 14, 15, 16 years old. And to be behind this microphone, the microphone where Dr. Michael Savage communes with his audience on a regular basis is something that it's a little beyond belief for me at times. I have to pinch myself because a part of my but I always pinch the part of the body that I can't feel where it's numb, so I won't hurt myself. You know, I don't have turf toe like a lot of football players in the foot NFL today. By the way, I am right now, as you are, listening to this program. The Michael Savage program, perhaps the most, and I say perhaps because I have to say that, honest program in talk radio, which is why his audience is the most loyal in all of radio. You hear it here first. If you go up to michaelsavage.com, there is nothing to be left to the imagination. His new book, Abuse of Power, Can I Say Barack Obama? Does it strike a bell? Abuse of Power, Journalism, Terrorism, and Patriotism, up on michaelsavage.com. Trickle Up Poverty, a book which will, if you're a regular listener to this program, you'll hear Michael in your head as you read the book. Abuse of Power is a novel, and it's not quite the same. You're he creates characters in it. So, but you will hear him in the other book, and it is an astonishing thing to hear that, because I'll never forget having read In Cold Blood with Truman Capote. Many. If you don't know what that book is, ladies and gentlemen, if you're too young, it's a book about murderers. And Truman Capote was, I mean, I didn't know who he was, actually, when I read the book. And since I didn't know who the author was, the voice was in my head, was created by me, or perhaps some an amalgam of other voices. And then I saw his picture, I think, on Newsweek magazine, and he looked like a tough guy.
And then I heard him speak, and he was like, yeah, it is a conversation.
And I was destroyed. And I went back and I tried to reread it.
Yeah, this is a cold, dark day in the places that I've been. And I just don't know.
And he has his tongue thrust. And I'm thinking, I couldn't read it again. I could never read the book again. It's a terrible thing. But then not everybody has a voice in their head. Unfortunately, the one that's in my head most of the time is Barack Obama, because he gives so many damn speeches. God, is there a day where he doesn't appear on national television saying the same bloody thing over and over again? The same meaningless thing? He won't wait now. I pass this bill now. Let's do something now. You know what? We've been waiting 900 days for a budget. And he's the head of his party. We are waiting for a budget in the worst, he keeps saying it, the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression. And we're still waiting for a budget. And we don't have it because he wants to saddle any hard decision on Republicans. That's it. That's the only answer. I mean, that really is it. But you don't see anyone in this bloody media talking about it, because we don't have a media. There is, this weekend has been, what did you see the horrific end of Gaddafi? Regardless of, I mean, he deserved the end. He's a bloody murderer. He's a butcher. And there were some family members of those who were killed from the Lockerbie bombing. And they were feeling much better after they saw him die. And it was the one thing that made me, in my own mind, I resolved that it was a good thing that they got to see, because they felt better. And they deserve to feel better. Because our government and the British government, the Scottish government, the West, did not in any real way attempt to settle the issue of justice. And there is no, because there is no justice. There is none. And in a very strange way, for those poor individuals who've had to suffer all these years with this Michael Jackson wannabe who murdered people, there was an element of justice. And I heard them say it, and I said, all right then. The brutality, the murder, and today they had video of him being sodomized up on the internet before his death by his own people. And of course, I sit and I look at this, and just as when Dr. Savage played the tapes of Nick Berg being decapitated, this is important for us to see, to understand that this is the real world. The United States has been a fantasy. A group of men decided that this is the way the world should be, that this is that freedom is something given to us by God, and they were going to institute it, and they set up some laws. And for some reason, for 200 some odd years, we have enjoyed this fantasy, because other men are willing to die and shed their blood for it. That we get up every morning, go to work, buy televisions, buy automobiles, build buildings, drink clean water, ice skate, roller skate, go out and shoot ducks. We used to be able to shoot ducks, can't anymore. Not if the environmentalists have their way. We drill for oil. We used to be able to do that, can't do that anymore, not until we get some people out of the way. But we used to be able to do all of these wonderful things. because we had this freedom. And the freedom didn't come from other men. It came from something larger and greater. And they put it down on paper, they swore to it, and they were willing to die for it. And since that time, we have been living in that fantasy. And some people understand it, and others don't. The occupiers down there, those who occupy Wall Street and all of these other occupiers around the country are all neo-communists. That's all that they are. Defecating on police cars in doorways, having sex openly in the streets, raping people. And the president, I have some tape, the president understands these people. We're gonna connect him to this today. But there are some people who appreciate it, and it's mostly the individuals who listen to this program. Understand the fantasy of it, the pure joy, and the fact that it may not last, that it lives on the end of a gossamer thread. Civilization is precious, because really and truthfully, most of the world is not. And those videos and what happened to Gaddafi remind us that we are facing those who do not experience, believe in, admire civilization as we understand it. And there was a book, Samuel Huntington, The Clash of Civilizations. And that book is, as I should reread it, because he laid it all out. And we are going to deal with that today, because this is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
And this is Dwight Schultz filling in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. The telephone number here is 1-800-449-8255. As I'm sure most of you are aware, the president on Friday late, which is the typical time where they usually call it a document dump, this was a different kind of dump. The president leading from his behind told the American people that we were pulling out of Iraq. Everybody, we're all coming home. It was a stunning comment because, of course, he surrounded it with lots of superlatives for himself. Probably the most difficult situation we've ever been in, with Iran about to get the nuclear weapon, after having spent years attempting to democratize Iraq, he's pulling out. And the reasons given were pretty lame. Pretty lame. But I was reminded of how we were set up for this president, this Marxist. The first Marxist president that I could be wrong. There may have been another one at some point. Back, who knows, during one war or another. But this president is the first Marxist that could have been prevented but was permitted by the United States American media, which is no longer really a media. No longer. We don't have journalists anymore. We don't have any kind of journalist ethic. And I have examples of that we're going to go over today with the attacks on Herman Cain, which is quite astonishing, really, considering what they will not investigate about the man who's now the president of the United States. But anyway, this always stuck in my craw. This is the greatest understatement that I can remember in the last 4 or 5 years. This kind of, and it was a huge setup for what has happened to us today. Number four, please.
I want to be president of the United States, and obviously I do not want Senator Obama to be. But I have to tell you, he is a decent person and a person that you do not have to be scared as president of the United States.
Ah! I was very frightened of Barack Obama when McCain said this. I obviously knew more about Barack Obama and did more research than John McCain did. Because almost everything that Michael Savage has told you about Barack Obama has come to pass. And those of us who have delineated, explicitly tried to explain to you, this man is a Marxist. He is a socialist. You can use either one of those words. If you don't like Marxist, use socialist. He is now behaving not like the president of the United States, someone who loves this country. That is not what he's doing. In fact, Charles, get number nine ready. Here it is, ladies. This is the president of the United States, and I don't know why John McCain didn't have this emblazoned in his brain. Number nine, please.
I won't wear that pin on my chest. Instead, I'm going to try to tell the American people what I believe will make this country great.
Yeah, that's the American flag he's talking about. The symbol of all of the blood that has been shed since the founding of this country. He was working with a man named Bill Ayers who trampled it on a regular basis, and he probably wanted to impress him. That's probably what was going on. But I don't know how you can say you don't have anything to be afraid of a man in this country running for president who will not put an American flag on his lapel. I don't understand that. I don't understand it, and neither do you, and neither do most of the American people, and neither does the media. But they're happy that it's happened, and we have to live with it. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Dwight Schultz filling in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
And this is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Dwight Schultz, professional actor for over 40 years, best known as Howling Mad Murdoch on television's The A-Team, Star Trek The Next Generation, Voyager films, television, worked with a lot of the hoi polloi in Hollywood and around the country. I know show business in and out. I know talk radio in and out. From the standpoint of who is who, I basically sat and I will say this, I have learned more from talk radio, and I learned more in my teens from talk radio than I learned from my professors in school. I can say that now looking back at my age. I'm 64 years old, looking forward to many, many good years. As an android, my brain removed from my body in a small collapsible metal canister, rolling down a hill free, saved by an environmentalist, and at which point the poison in the water that keeps me alive will burst open and there will be retribution. Little Gaddafis will run all over the hillside. Ignore that. Ladies and gentlemen, but the telephone number here is 1-800-449-8255. The president, before we had our break, the president of the United States, as I mentioned, dumped on the American people that we were pulling out of Iraq because he couldn't negotiate with the Iraqis. And he basically said to Iran,
go at it. Have a good one. It's all yours now. We're leaving.
And the Secretary of State, our illustrious baggy pants Clintonite. That's right. I have to call her a Clintonite. I can't call her a Clinton because he was with so many other women. It's very difficult to really call her a Clinton. But she said, she warned Iran that we will be very angry if you do anything while we're leaving. We're going to be very, very angry. No, we're going to be very, 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 very angry. And I want to tell you, I am sure Ahmadinejad was quaking in his boots, particularly after that attempt to assassinate the Saudi ambassador failed. I bet he is really sweating bullets, especially with Sadr and all of those Quds forces in Iraq right now that we can't do a bloody thing about because we're leaving while they're getting a nuclear weapon. That's right, folks. You know, in military parlance, there's a lot of strategy involved in these things. It's not really just a matter of sending a lot of troops here, sending a lot of troops there. You actually have reasons for it. You do. Now, the president doesn't appear to have any reasons unless you assume he is who he is, which is a Marxist. And what he's doing in the short time that he has left, because I do believe, unlike others, I believe he's going to lose. And I don't think he cares. I think he sees what he has to do. He's doing the best. He's actually doing the best job probably of any president in recent years in destroying the United States of America. And those of us who were looking at the Arab Spring and telling those of you who would listen that this was not this was not some American revolution. This was not in any conceptual way our idea of freedom and democracy, the way the Secretary of State still talks. We're not going to have democracy. What happened in Egypt, betraying our friends, and they were our friends, or assisting in the murder of a tyrant like Gaddafi, or not assisting in the removal of a few mullahs and murderers in Iran or in Syria is all problematical because the whole region is moving in one direction. And this was today on Fox News. And this is there's two little cuts here. This is Leland Vitter. We're talking about Egypt now. It's out of off the radar screen because we've been dealing with Libya. But, you know, you're not going to be surprised because you listened to Dr. Michael Savage. But here it is in stark words. And you'll hear a Salafist tell you what's going on in Egypt. And ladies and gentlemen, the Tunisians have voted to go Sharia, to go Islamist. We were told today that is where Libya is going to go. Now I want you to hear where Egypt is going to go. Number one, please.
For so long, the United States and Israel could count on Egypt as being the linchpin of the Middle East and someone who was in lockstep to support them. The issue, though, now, with the rise of these radical groups faster than any of the other political organizations that have started here in this part of the world, the mother of the Arab world, could change forever. Kicked out of the United States for being too radical, Hisham El-Ashrai now runs a small tailor shop in Cairo. But his real mission in life is far from making clothes.
I'm trying to convert as many as I can because this is the war. It's to, you know, to wash the brain of the people.
El-Ashrai helps lead a group called the Salafists, and they are growing, evidenced by this million-man march a few months ago where protesters carried pictures of Osama bin Laden and demanded Egypt become an Islamic state.
Does that mean you'd like to see Sharia law in Egypt?
Yes. Yeah, we're definitely supporting Sharia law. Yeah, I'm against any other system. I am an enemy of democracy.
Hisham El-Ashrai is one of many of the Muslim Brotherhood of Salafists, and they are against democracy. They are against democracy the way I am against Sharia, because Sharia is anti-constitutional to the United States of America. It is not Western. It is not of Western society. It is not of Western civilization. We are now seeing, although Mr. Huntington, Samuel P. Huntington, was roundly criticized for his book, The Clash of Civilizations, The Remaking of the World Order. I'm sorry, folks. Huntington was right. And all of you who made fun of him, who attacked him, who said this is not going on, you were all wrong. You're wrong. We are now seeing the real domino effect. It's happening right before our eyes, right across the Middle East. And instead of the United States being a stabilizing force for Western civilization, looking out for Christians, for human rights, for female rights, by the way, women's rights, something that we in the West have attempted to enshrine in our civilization. This president in particular has taken the most powerful country in the world and has removed it from the situation. And strangely enough, the most, I don't want to use the, well, no, let me just go and say it. Those who are most antithetical, those who have called for the destruction of the United States, this president has treated the most gingerly, maybe even with, should I say, love. Yes, love. Charles, get number 16 ready, if you can. I want you to listen. This was the president of the United States during the revolution that was going, almost revolution, that was going on a few years ago in Iran, which we ignored, although we certainly kicked Mubarak out, who was our friend. But when there was there were trepidations going on in Iran and there were some threats against the mullahs, this is what our president had to say. Number 16, please.
It's not productive, given the history of U.S.-Iranian relations, to be seen as meddling, the U.S. president meddling in Iranian elections.
There you go. And that is exactly what happened. No one could understand why he didn't meddle, why he didn't insinuate American conscience into that revolution, especially when that woman was murdered on the streets and her picture was all over the world, just like Gaddafi's picture was all over the world. But this president did nothing. Well, it might have something to do with his closest advisor, Ms. Jarrett, who is Iranian. It may have something to do with that. It may have something to do with the president's instincts about the United States and its power around the world and how best to neutralize it. Because if there's a country that could destabilize the entire Middle East, it is Iran, who would be very close to a nuclear weapon. And if the president did not have our best interests at heart, if he was a Marxist, if he believed that the United States should be strangled from the standpoint of power, what better way to do it than to allow the Iranians to get the weapon that they want? Because they've already called for the destruction of Israel and the United States, and that would neutralize us. We would be limited in the way we could behave, and so would all of Europe. Now, there's a lot of dangers and threats here because of this. A lot of them. I want to play for you the second part of Leland Vitter's piece. This just puts a little tag on it all. It's a nice little button of what it is that they're interested in over there, and why we look so weak to them. And it's an example of that, in fact, that is the way they see us. Number two, Charles, please. Number two.
It was a Salafi cleric who inspired the attack on Israel's embassy, and the rise of radical Islam in Egypt has gone unchecked by the army.
We had a day where the Salafis declared if women go out and veil, they will be kidnapped, and that scared the heck out of everybody.
Like, you know, they're scaring everybody that Muslims are going to cut the hand of the thief, right? I don't know why people getting scared of this. I mean, if you're not a thief, you shouldn't be afraid of that.
The Salafists here say they not only would like to see Sharia law here in Egypt, but would also like to see it in the United States, but will stick at least right now to organizing in this country. However, John, just behind me is the U.S. Embassy, where there is now a protest by these guys. They're asking the United States to release the cleric who was the mastermind behind the 1993 World Trade Center attacks. And they said right now this protest is peaceful, but very ominously offered that that certainly could change if they don't get what they want.
There you go, if they don't get what they want. Isn't it funny that we didn't have the guts to say that to the Iraqis after having, in essence, liberated them from Saddam Hussein, attempting to stabilize their country? We didn't have the leverage to tell them we need to have these troops in your country because we need them for our own security and for yours. They, the Salafists, the Muslim Brotherhood, can demand the release of Abdul Rahman, the man behind the first bombing of the World Trade Center. But we can't negotiate in a tough way with the Iraqis that we literally put into power. They would not be there if it were not for the United States. But the reason that it all fell apart was that they know that we're running away, running scared. This is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
We came, we saw, he died.
That was your Secretary of State, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Dwight Schultz, sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage. And that was your Secretary of State. She was talking about Muammar Gaddafi. I understand the jubilation, I do, but there are restraints that public officials, propriety, supposed to take precedence over personal joy. The bullet in the head, the gross photographs taken by people with cell phones. All of those things, you know, you can't help. But giggling and making comments like that, yes, you can help that. Not attractive. Not attractive at all. And remember this. And this is the salient fact. That all of these individuals who will be taking the reins of government in the Middle East, they all hate the United States. None of them want us anywhere near any Arab land, Islamic land. They don't want us near land that they claim to be Islamic. They don't. They want us out. They want us dead. They don't want Christians in their lands unless they subjugate themselves to Islam. And so this little bit of laughing, even though it's to us, yes, we can laugh about it. But it's unseemly for the head of state to be doing it. Not attractive. It doesn't make me feel comfortable when she says to Iran, you better watch out as we are pulling out. And it doesn't make me feel comfortable about our men and women in Afghanistan in harm's way. Karzai's already said he's going to, if there's a war between Pakistan and the United States, he's on Pakistan's side. That's Karzai in Afghanistan. Do you think that's the result of by any chance of a show of weakness by this president and by our intentions? Do you think when Hassan Nasrallah, the head of Hezbollah, said he cannot wait to watch Americans leave the Middle East the way we left and betrayed our allies in Vietnam. He cannot wait. He was laughing about it. He was giggling. He gave interview after interview predicting it. And guess who was right? Hassan Nasrallah, Hezbollah leader, murderer, Jew hater, American hater, tyrant, was right. We just had to make him right. And you think you're safer because of it? You think bringing those troops home is going to make you safer? Do you think military power and strength makes you safer? Or do you think bowing before every despot in the world and allowing the United States to be, well, you saw the picture of that Occupy Wall Street layabout defecating on the side of a police car? Do you think that makes us stronger? It may be a show of independence to defecate in the street openly in front of other people. It may show a contempt for propriety and human civilization, but it is not a show of strength, ladies and gentlemen. The telephone number here is 1-800-449-8255, and when we come back, we will get to your phone calls, and we'll get into the election, which is another story altogether. This is Dwight Schultz, sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
We came, we saw, he died.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
And this is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. Dwight Schultz, an actor well over 40 years, I keep adding to that, best known as Howling Mad Murdoch on television's The A-Team, Barkley on Star Trek The Next Generation and Voyager, motion pictures, Fat Man and Little Boy with Paul Newman, The Long Walk Home with Sissy Spacek and Whoopi Goldberg. A lot of plays in the theater. I worked with Glenn Close, Maggie Smith, Patti LuPone, many, many wonderful actors and actresses, Charlton Heston. I've just been a long time in the entertainment business, met a lot of good people, and the majority of them, even the liberals, the majority of them, the actors in particular, have been fairly wonderful people. But it is an oppressive atmosphere to be a conservative. It's just very, very oppressive. Eventually, it breaks you down because the real pressures come from the casting directors, the producers, in line with certain ideological actors who give you a tenth degree of questions before they will allow you to be on the same set with them or the same stage. And that's a reality in Hollywood. That was a reality. I want to get to the last hour. We were really talking about the dump, the international dump. Leading from his behind, the President of the United States told us we were leaving Iraq on Friday. All of the issues around it, complicated, some, and I have some articles here which I may get to in the next hour, call it a disaster. And I would tend to think that it will be. But we are now in the middle of a campaign to replace Barack Obama as President of the United States before he, I think, achieves his ultimate objective, which is to place us in the socialist sphere, in our rightful place. And what is that? Well, I want to just give you an example of, and now these are, this is the president talking, and this is his primary appointee. I'm going to play them both. And they are both in line, and the second, well, first I'm going to play the president. This is the president's opinion of you and the country in which you live. Number eight, please, Charles.
I believe in American exceptionalism, just as I suspect that the Brits believe in British exceptionalism and the Greeks believe in Greek exceptionalism.
There you go, and you saw the Greek exceptionalism. And we are, and no question about it, getting ready to follow them with this president. He'd like to see that, actually, because then it will turn his words into gold. But his chief appointee, the man who you've never seen on Face the Nation or Meet the Press or Fox News Sunday, he'll never appear. He will never be questioned. His ideas and his thoughts are in the forefront of the destruction of the United States as a power, as you know it. He is personally responsible for the dismantling of NASA, for pushing the conceptual idea of man-made global warming, and putting a chokehold on all of the energy systems in the United States. And this is John Holdren. And this is what he thinks of the United States. Number six, please.
So there has been a strain of what many people call U.S. exceptionalism in the United States, the notion that the United States is so big, so important, so powerful, so technologically advanced that it can and should do what it wants. I think this strain is misguided.
American exceptionalism, to say he thinks the same thing. Now, of course, he said, oh, America can do anything it wants. It isn't that. That's a mis. That is the socialist, Marxist view of the United States. You're so big, you're so powerful, you're an oppressor. The good that the United States has done doesn't show up in that little phrase of Holdren's. But I make no mistake about this, ladies and gentlemen. John Holdren is the most destructive individual in the United States today. He is the machine. He's the gun. He's the ammunition by which this president has begun through the EPA and through all of his directives, along with Cass Sunstein and the regulations, to put a stranglehold on the power of the United States. Because it is power that has given us the ability to achieve, I think, the best standard of living in the world and the greatest position in the world from the standpoint of energy, from the standpoint of industry, invention. It has made us literally the nation where everybody wanted to come. That's what it made us. And Holdren wants to make sure that that doesn't happen again and that we take our rightful place somewhere down the food chain with him up at the top, along with this president, somewhere probably at the United Nations. And that's their opinion of the country that you live in and that I live in. We elected this guy president, didn't want to wear an American flag, didn't think we were exceptional, appoints people who don't like this country, the Van Joneses of the world, the Cass Sunsteins, the Occupy Wall Street crowd who defecate on police cars. That's what the president knows. They're the people he likes. He really thinks something about that. That's real demonstration. Not the Tea Party. Not people who actually who read the Constitution, who respond to the Constitution and law. No, no, no. Agitation. That's what this president understands. And we're in an election right now to remove him from that office. And it's a very important one. And we have some callers here. We have one particular caller, Cameron in Hartford, Connecticut. You are on the Savage Nation, Cameron.
Good evening, Dwight.
Good evening.
We especially appreciate your style and your substance, especially when it comes to the knowledge of the hoi polloi in Hollywood, who very few of us care anything about, as they contribute little to the betterment of the country and have contributed tremendously to the destruction of the country. But I have studied a different area, and that is modern-day vote fraud, which began in Chicago in the 1960 election when Richard Nixon fairly and squarely defeated John Fitzgerald Kennedy. And the mayor of Chicago, then Dick Daley, received a phone call from Kennedy's father saying, "Dick, my kid lost. Unless you can write down 700,000 votes on a scrap of paper and give them to the registrar, to the Secretary of State, so that my kid will win Cook County, thereby Illinois, thereby the presidency." And I've studied vote fraud since then. And I agree with everything you've said tonight, including the real label that belongs on Obama, which is Marxist. But you are dead wrong as to the removal of him in an election. There is no way that a Republican can win the presidential election of 2012. It has already been hardwired for the Democrat, whether it be Obama or the cackling Hillary Clinton, who has this cavalier attitude toward killing men, which reminds me of the president of the Morgan Guarantee, the Madison Guarantee Trust Company in Little Rock, Arkansas, who died coincidentally the day before he was to testify against the Clintons. Remember his name, James McDougal?
Yes. Yes, the man who described the Clintons as a tornado, a cyclone going through. Right. Now, let me ask you this. I am concerned about the election. I certainly am concerned about vote fraud because aware as I was about the termite mound that is Chicago and the corruption that is in the Democratic Party, particularly now with Richard Trumka going into the office more than any other figure in the United States of America, I still have a difficult time believing that, as you said, the election is hardwired for the Democrats. There is a Republican Party. There are people who are, particularly with this election, going to be glued, absolutely and totally glued to what's going on. And I looked at Wisconsin, and I was fearful there of corruption, but it turned out not to be the case. They were not able to pull that off. And I understand from a lot of individuals that there was a lot of attempted fraud there. What makes you so sure that nationwide that they are so capable as to pull off a nationwide fraud? If the election were extraordinarily close, as it was with Nixon and Kennedy, perhaps I might agree. But the sentiment in the country at the moment is such, I don't think this is going to be close. I mean, that's my opinion. So what is it that makes you think that it is a done deal?
Well, it will not be close, Dwight, but it will be a runaway for Obama because of the work that's been done by a large task force of very powerful people to build on what they perfected in the 2008 election. You may remember the image of a large Black Panther man in combat fatigues as he stood outside the polling places
right.
in Philadelphia
yes.
and
right.
kept voters away because they were the wrong color, that being white. And you may recall what happened in Troy, New York. And you may recall what happened in every city, town, and state throughout this country. And that is that there was no true voting anywhere. There may be some exceptions, but the point is that the new book, bestseller called Subversion Incorporated explains that not only is ACORN still here, but it is more powerful than it ever was because it got rid of its name, ACORN, and decentralized into 740 different organizations made up of people canvassing your neighborhood with clipboards, saying that they're wondering how you feel about some conservationist cause or something else. And what has been done is the coordination of their command of technology and the ability to pull together through the handheld computers and the Facebook and the networking, all these propagandized young people. And there will be no chance for the Republican in this thing, and it will not even be close, because as each one of us Americans who is a stooge, who thinks that their job on Election Day is simply to vote. No, remember what Harry Reid told his supporters to do in Nevada. He said, tomorrow I want you to go out and work for me. He didn't say I want you to vote for me. He said, go out and work for me tomorrow. And every Democrat knows what work means. And work means do everything within your capability to steal every vote you can.
Well, thank you, Cameron. Thank you for your call. I am not as cynical as Cameron. I believe it is going to be tough, and I do agree with him that ACORN has been the recipient of a lot of money. But right now, ladies and gentlemen, we have more to do. This is Dwight Schultz filling in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. And this is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. The telephone number here is 1-800-449-8255. I am a professional actor, best known as Howling Mad Murdoch on television's The A-Team and Barkley on Star Trek The Next Generation. I was not promoted until the very end of the series. I was on it for almost 13 years as a lieutenant. That's a sad fact. But that's television. That's TV. We, unfortunately, are not living in a television program, but in the real world, in the real time. And I guess, the United States is as close to a fantasy world as it possibly could possibly be a fantasy world, in which people think we are so protected that the government goes on of its own volition. There is no law of entropy. No energy has to go in to maintain the system. It just goes on forever. Like Michael Moore used to think that General Motors was going to go on forever. Of course, we saw that Michael Moore was wrong. Although he continues to eat hamburgers and fast food to the point where, according to his own ideology, which is the zero-sum game, if somebody else has it, you don't. Since he's so rotund or portly, there are children dying. That's all I can think of every time I look at him. I don't subscribe to that theory, but he does. We are talking about the election here. We're going to continue talking about it after we come back at the bottom of the hour, and we're going to get to some more callers. But also when we get back, you simply are not going to believe this story, which I found over at Pajamas Media. Richard Fernandez used to be his pen name was Rechard. From the Belmont Club. He's a remarkable guy. Some of the most beautiful writing. I mean, he's a fabulous writer. He could write about the most difficult subjects with pure lucidity and grace. And you would go from I just love reading him, and he's always insightful. And he's I want you to put this phrase in your head: intergenerational foundation. In Great Britain, it is the end of socialism. It's socialism at work today over in Great Britain, soon to be here. If we don't remove this president from office, we will return and tell you about intergenerational justice. This is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage. We'll be right back.
And this is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. If you'd like to get in contact with me, by the way, you can. It's DwightSchultzFansite.nl. That's the Netherlands. That's the only way you can get in touch with me. I read every email. I can't answer them all. I would like to, but I read everything that comes in to me. That's it. If you didn't get it, it's too late. Ladies and gentlemen, before we left, by the way, I'm an actor, have been for over 40 years. If you don't know who I am, and why should you? Best known as Howling Mad Murdoch on television's The A-Team and Barkley on Star Trek The Next Generation. I teased this article by Richard Fernandez, better known as Richard, over at the Belmont Club on the website called Pajamas Media. One of the finest bloggers ever. He writes about the military. He's ex-military, and he is just a spectacular mind. And he captured this little piece, people don't use pens anymore. He put his computer to his monitor. But he put his mind into words. And I want to read a little bit of it for you because, ladies and gentlemen, this is why we want to remove the President of the United States from office, because this is where we're headed. A new term has been added to the litany of catchphrases describing enemies of the people. To the words wreckers, profiteers, capitalists, roaders, we now have to add bedroom blockers. Oh, yeah. You think Wall Street is bad. You think the big pharmaceuticals are bad. Big oil is bad. Big energy is bad. Bedroom blockers. It is now used to refer to persons over 60 years of age who live in homes in Britain with more bedrooms than they need. Let me say that again. It refers to people over 60 years of age who live in homes in Britain with more bedrooms than they need. The Intergenerational Foundation, an organization probably established by George Soros, I don't know that for a fact, just a supposition, established to promote fairness. Is that a word you've heard recently? Fairness between generations. Not just equality of income. Fairness between generations. And it notes that these homes with spare bedrooms are now being selfishly used by older people when they are needed by the young. In a report, the IF has proposed a tax increase to squeeze seniors out of their homes, to free up space.
Hey, you old man, get out of there.
Now listen to this. The report stated that there are 25 million bedrooms empty in homes across the country, many of which are owned by single old people. I don't know why we just don't go and kill them. Oh, boy. It's perfectly understandable that retired people cling to their homes long after they have outlived the usefulness of the place to bring a family in. They are now hoarding housing. But there are profound social consequences of their actions, which are now causing real problems in a country where new housing is almost non-existent. It called for reforms such as the exemption from stamp duty for over 60s. It also suggested measures to encourage people to sell or withdraw some universal benefits from those living in houses worth more than £500,000. Buried beneath the language of reform, fairness, clinging in the profound social consequences of the lack of housing is one salient idea.
Where do we find the money that we need? We need to find more money. We're going to tax the breath with cap and trade. We're going to tax the air where the carbon and the breath escapes to. And where people flatulate, we're going to tax that. That'll be next. But now we got to tax old people in their extra rooms because we need the money. It's only fair.
Its proponents are looking for a new source of taxes to provide for things the real economy can no longer produce. And since the Intergenerational Foundation is based in a country where new housing is tough, the best place to find resources is under Grandma's bed. Or quite literally, in Grandma's house. If only government could take it or make it available. Oh, this would solve all the problems. In calling for a government solution, to rectify intergenerational injustice. Where have you heard that phrase before? Social justice? Intergenerational justice. The Intergenerational Foundation is oblivious to the fact that government solutions created the problem in the first place. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, I suggest that you go read the rest of this article. It's too long for me to read everything to you. And he writes far better than I read. But it is the next step here. It's a comedy. We can't make this stuff up. If you did, people would not believe it. If you took this to Hollywood, they wouldn't say it was real. I mean, for instance, this president, how many times have you heard this president use the term millionaires and billionaires? Millionaires and billionaires. Fair share. How many times have you heard these hackneyed phrases used over and over and over again until you are sick, running around the country, attacking everybody and anything? Governmental justice, social justice, income equality, socialism, every phrase that can possibly be used. And the president of the United States equates the Tea Party with all of these phrases. Oh, they're the same. It's the same. It's all the same. Now, you watched the Tea Party evolve. You heard what the Tea Party said. You heard what they were responding to. They were responding to socialism, big government, taking over health care, spending too much. And they responded to it. You've seen Occupy Wall Street. They don't know what they're doing. Every phrase they use comes out of the Marxist handbook. And yet the president of the United States and Nancy Pelosi and John Kerry called the Tea Party terrorists, Nazis, astroturfs. But what did they say about the Occupy Wall Street groups? What did they say? What was their response? Did the president of the United States, when he was asked, did he say he didn't understand what they were doing down there? Do you think that Stephen Lerner and all of the unions, which have been hyping this Wall Street sit-in for maybe 7-8 months? You think the president didn't know about it? You think that the president of the United States didn't have a hand in it? Do you think all those meetings with Richard Trumka in the White House weren't about what they were going to do last May before the Arab Spring? And then, oh, no, we're going to postpone it to September? Do you think that all of these individuals who were responsible for the sit-ins in Wisconsin didn't have anything? All these unions, the SEIU, the AFL-CIO, do you think that they were not involved with this? Richard Trumka, who says he didn't join the progressive movement to negotiate contracts but to turn America into a progressive America? Do you think that these socialists and Marxists didn't plan this and that the president isn't involved in it? You're wrong if you think that's the case. If you don't see the writing on the wall, if you don't see the phrases which are blatant, you're missing something. You're being fooled. This is a joke. It's all a big joke on you and me and all Americans. This guy who wouldn't wear an American flag on his lapel. This guy doesn't believe in American exceptionalism. This guy who appoints a communist, who still, by the way, in the Democratic Party, Van Jones. This guy who has appointed every hackneyed progressive that he possibly can in positions of real importance while he has appointed figureheads from the Clinton administration in all the unimportant positions. This guy who's one executive order after the other, trying to bypass Congress, who took over the automobile industry, now he wants to take over the housing industry. He can't wait. He can't wait. He can't wait. Well, neither can we, Mr. President. We can't wait for the election. This is ridiculous. And this story by Fernandez, and I beg you to go over and read it all, because the Brits are ahead of us in socialists. They're socialists already. Their whole culture, that they have kowtowed, their dhimmis, they've fallen down prey to the Islamic left, because that's exactly what it is. And they're losing their culture completely. They just totally destroyed. And now intergenerational justice. Let's kill old people. We'll be next. We'll euthanize them. Well, they don't need. Listen, if they don't need two rooms, they only need one. Somebody over 60, all they need is a toilet and an 8x6 room. What does that sound like? We got a lot of empty rooms in old prisons. Let's just decorate them and put old people there. Ladies and gentlemen, the Progressive Party, the progressive mind, is a perverse mind. We can't make this stuff up. It's real. And it's coming your way before Christmas. It's a horror film, but it's real. This president who runs around the country in a big black bus, campaigning continuously, talking about he can't wait while he can't put a budget together, while you're waiting for jobs. What was he doing? Just think about it. Attacking the social structure of the military through don't ask, don't tell. That's his big achievement. Making sure that homosexuals could get into the military and then making it plausible that the military will be reduced to such numbers that we'll have to reinstate the draft and homosexuals will no longer be exempt. This is really great. He withdraws from Iraq just as Iran is about to get a nuclear weapon. Now think about it. You call a policeman to protect you because some guy across the street has threatened you with a shotgun. The cop is standing there talking to you. You're giving him the story. Here comes the guy across the street with the shotgun. And suddenly the cop says, wait a minute, I got to go to my car. And in fact, I got to go back to the central office to get my notepad. I forgot it, okay? Yes, but the guy's coming here with the shotgun. Yeah, I'll be back, okay? Don't worry. I'll be at the office. You have your cell phone? No, I've seen it. Don't worry about it. He's not going to use that shotgun. Don't worry. He's brought it, yes, but it's all for show. Ladies and gentlemen, we are living a nightmare that is, I think, perhaps one of the, if there's someone with a great sense of style and an ability to write, there should be a motion picture that captures the absolute absurdity of everything that is going on at this moment in time. We should, and there should be a film ready to go before the election, with an outcome that is clearly in sight. The United States losing all respectability around the world. The Saudis don't want to have anything to do with us after what we did to Mubarak. All of the nations of the world in the Middle East will soon be members of the Muslim Brotherhood. All Sharia. All looking to us and wondering when we will drink the Sharia Kool-Aid. This is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
And this is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. And I am here to say that the intergenerational injustice movement in Great Britain is in danger of coming to the United States. But I warn every one of you Brits that old people in the United States have guns. We have guns aplenty. I may have more than one room, but I keep my guns in the other room. And you're not going to take that room away from me because it's against the law. Because the room is a safe. How's that? And I'm forced to put those guns in a safe. So by law, I have to have it. I'm joking. I don't have that many guns. I only have enough to protect myself. I told my wife, she's on her own. I didn't say that. It's not true. It's not true. None of that is true. But some of the other things, but the intergenerational injustice movement is true. And it is just another conceptual folly. It's just conceptual folly from the socialists, the Marxists, the rabble, the brains without brains. That's all that they are. That's all that they are. Socialists, I don't know. It's almost, well, of course, Dr. Savage said it's a pathology, really. It is. They're sick. And question them at length while shoving chocolate. I don't know, something disgusting, something that is just, you know, we should ply them with alcohol and drugs and put them in some state of nirvana, tell them they're in nirvana. I don't know. Some matrix. Maybe they'd be happy with video games. I don't know. Maybe Gaddafi would have been happy with the first generation of Xboxes. I don't know. I don't know. But this is so stupid. It's so incomprehensible. I just don't. I read this stuff and it is coming here. It starts there and then it comes here. So this is a warning. This is what's coming down the pike. Anyway, I want to get to a caller here who's been holding on. Joel in Wisconsin. You are on the Savage Nation.
Thank you. I just want to make a comment, if I could, on yes. the Iraq situation and what, yes. what I fear has happened. I'm an intelligence professional, and that's all I'm going to say about that. However, what I see with the withdrawal of troops from Iraq at the time now is that the Iraqi military is in no way capable of defending its borders from any sort of outside attack or even a inside. And what I mean by that is you have Al-Quds, which is an Iranian special force operation forces group, operating within Iraq that's training a lot of these militants and these insurgents. What they're going to do is they're going to bring down Iraq from within and use Iraq as kind of a buffer between Saudi Arabia and Israel, as well as using Syria, which Iran also supports Hezbollah, which is linked to Assad in Syria, as more leverage to prevent Saudi Arabia from being able to exert its authority over the region. And what they're going to do is they're going to destroy Iraq. They're going to push, you know, they're going to basically take everything and create their new Persian Empire. And we are not going to be in a position to stop it unless we get a president who is able and willing to put forth maximum effort in ensuring that such a hegemony does not occur within the Middle East.
Well, I think you're spot on in terms of their intention, and thank you for your call. That is, I think, accurate. I think that's an accurate observation, and it is frightening to realize that the president has waited to this moment to do it as he has, and then to put rosy glasses on all of us and tell us, oh, it's going to be just fine. Because Ahmadinejad and those lovely mullahs, they have only our best interests at heart. I love you, Barack Obama. That's it, folks. This is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. Dwight Schultz, best known as Howling Mad Murdoch on television, the 80s. I sound like I'm talking about somebody else, but it's me I'm talking about. Best known as Howling Mad Murdoch on television's the 18, and Barclay on Star Trek, The Next Generation, and Voyager. Also the film First Contact, which was a lot of fun to make, by the way. Also, I've worked in theater and film television for many years, over 40 years, 41, 42 years altogether, and very well-versed in the culture of the leftists in Hollywood. Also, a talk show aficionado. So I've been listening to talk radio hosts for many, many years. Was born in Baltimore. And listened to many, many, many fine talk show hosts as they went through Baltimore, including John Sterling, who started off, he was the voice of the New York Yankees for a while, but Alan Christian. I used to listen to Barry Farber initially with my little RCA Victor 7-transistor blue and gold radio that was given to me on Christmas. It was one of the great gifts of my life, a little earphone, and I used to tune in WOR out of New York City and Barry Farber, who's had a profound effect upon me many, 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 many years ago. Now, of course, we have Dr. Michael Savage and other talk show hosts, and I have tried to follow them all because I learn more from listening to those who have made it to the microphone. And let me tell you, I know there are people who make it to the microphone who don't and shouldn't be there, but you know Savage deserves to be there. If you go up to michaelsavage.com, every topic that you see up there is a penetrating, important topic for you to know and to understand. You need to go up there. His books are up there. It's a headline. It's what you need to know every morning when you wake up, particularly now as we move into the election season, because everything up there is almost an indictment of the man who now sits in the White House, astonishingly never having to answer a question. Or if he ever is asked a question, even obliquely, he spends 25 minutes answering it so that there's no time for anybody else to say, excuse me, you're not answering. Don't you want to have somebody to say, Mr. President, please stop it? Don't you want somebody to say, Mr. President, would you please just tell the American people that you're a Marxist? Be honest. Why can't you tell the people who you are? Why can't you tell people what your background really is? What was your executive experience, Mr. President, prior to becoming president? What was the only executive experience you've ever had? Who was it with? Wasn't it with Bill Ayers? Wasn't it? That's really what you want to hear, but we are not going to hear it because we're going to vote him out, I think, before it ever gets to that. But there are things which are inexplicable, sad, almost impossible to explain. Here, for instance, let me give you an example of something that's happened here. I hail from the sunny state of California, which used to be a model of business, enterprise, entrepreneurship. Everybody and everybody wanted to go to the West. Go West, young man. The gold, sir, the gold mines, the gold cameras, the railroads. Everybody came to California, the Golden State. Now everybody's leaving. Why? Well, California, instead of leading the world, it's one of the great economies, is now caught in, as it is a one-party state. It is the example of socialism in the United States and how it has failed. It has led the way to failure. It doesn't matter how badly the state is run by progressives, gang members. We hired a mayor who was a gang member. It doesn't matter in Los Angeles. Criminals everywhere. It doesn't matter. We just put them back in. It doesn't matter how bad things are. We just put them back in, vote them back in, give them another shot at bringing us to how fast can we go down? As the rest of the world was waking up to the global warming nonsense, California decided, you know what,
if it's a fraud, why don't we just go all the way with it until it fails? Isn't that what they said in 2001 Space Odyssey? Isn't that what Hal said? I suggest that you just put that instrument back in until it fails. So that's what California did. Well, if cap and trade is a failure, let's institute it when nobody else is, and let's wait for us all to fail.
Stephen Hayward, up at powerlineblog.com, had a great piece. This is Dateline Brussels. EU weighs pullback on emissions. The European Union is for the first time clearly questioning whether it should press ahead with long-term plans to cut greenhouse gas emissions if other countries don't follow suit. Here's what a headline from Japan, Tokyo. Japan is reconsidering plans to cut carbon dioxide emissions by 25% in 2020. Remember the Kyoto Protocol? Yeah, they're not going to do it. Meanwhile, California plans to launch and have instituted into law their long-promised cap-and-trade program, which will cause a flight of industry from the state to further embarrass and burden its already 12% unemployment rate. And can you explain it? Can you explain suicide? Can you do it? I know national suicide, civilizational suicide. And from what I hear, I haven't read the book. I'm so far behind in all of my books, but I've been listening to him as he's been making the rounds. And it sounds a great deal like the book I mentioned earlier, Samuel P. Huntington's The Clash of Civilizations and the Remaking of the World Order. But there is this point at where it becomes inevitable. Inevitability that if you strangle with regulation everything that keeps you alive, that you're going to die. Strangulation. If someone puts their hands around your throat and they squeeze long enough and prevent blood from reaching your brain, you will die. Let me repeat that. You will die. If we allow environmentalists, the President of the United States, progressives like John Holdren, Barack Obama, Lisa Jackson at the EPA, the Sierra Club, and all the progressive socialist Marxists who now have a stranglehold on the energy of the United States, if we permit them to put their throats around the greatest engine in the history of the world, the United States of America, it will die. If we allow an unfettered number of individuals to come into the country without any restrictions whatsoever, open borders, unbridled, illegal immigration, the ship will sink. At some point, a stasis will be reached whereby just one little tip of the seesaw, just one little tiny tip of the seesaw, there will be nothing left over. There will be a conflict, a destruction, a depression like no one has ever seen in this country, because ships do sink, because strangulation does kill, because you do need blood to live, because we do need oil and coal and gas, because turbines, air, and solar will not run this country today. Isn't going to happen. Isn't going to happen. And right now we are being slowly strangled, slowly being kept from our position of the most powerful nation in the world, while the rest of the world is drilling for oil. If you're not aware of it, Russia and Putin are claiming the Arctic floor. They put a flag there. Did you know that? There's going to be a conflict there, folks. I'm telling you. Unless we wake up, I don't think anybody in California is ever going to wake up. People are going to have to leave en masse. They're leaving en masse now, but I mean all of us are going to have to leave. Anybody who produces anything, anybody who pays taxes is actually going to have to leave for them to wake up one day and say, where's the money? Where's the money? I don't understand it. The money's gone. Only then, when they start going at each other's throats, will they wake up and realize there's nowhere to go. And everybody else has left. This is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
And this is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. The election, it's very fascinating to see the way Herman Cain is being attacked at the moment. Before coming in here to do the show, I saw a little bit of a headline that Cain said that Karl Rove was out to get him. And because Rove represents the upper echelon of the, basically the Rockefeller Republican part of the party. And I agree with Cain. I agree 100%. And Rove had his little whiteboard this morning up on Fox and Friends and other Fox programs with all of the mistakes that Cain has made recently. And it's fascinating that Herman Cain can be questioned on abortion, on Gitmo. And you know what? And I want to say this. Most of these issues are liberal issues. They really are. They're liberal. Hey, this is what's so amazing. Liberals frame the issues, and then we, Republicans, allow ourselves to be questioned by liberals about liberal issues before we ever actually get into the conservative issues of great importance. And we start throwing stones at each other. We start attacking one another. We start tearing each other apart. And it happens election tome after election season. I mean, it just keeps going on and on and on. It never stops. And I thought about what Cain said with Karl Rove. And I'm going, when we come back after the bottom of the hour, I want to deal with his misstatements. Today on Fox and Friends, this morning, he made a very clear, he gave a very clear explanation about his misstatements. But he was not very clear about his position on abortion. And everybody said, oh, this is going to kill him now. Iowa, oh, no. He's not pro-life. He's not pro-life. Well, I have some questions that I'm going to throw out. I have a question I'm going to throw out. I'm going to throw it out to all of you when we come back after the bottom of the hour. And it's a question I've asked every male I've ever asked. I've gotten the same answer or no answer. And it goes right to the heart of the abortion issue. Because there are very few, if you're right to life, as I am, you do not believe that abortion is a contraceptive method, which is what liberals want it to be. That's the truth. Planned Parenthood became a contraception, became an abortion factory. That's the truth. That's where the controversy comes in. Abortion on demand, those phrases, that is where the war came about. The whole reason for Roe versus Wade and the lie that was at the center of it all, and the bad decision by the federal courts, the Supreme Court, to guarantee it as a constitutional right, is where the problem is. What Herman Cain, now this is just me defending him, as someone not skilled in the political world, he gave very bad answers. Very bad. And we're all going to get enmeshed in this abortion issue, which is terrible. It's just disgusting. But there are very few Americans who believe in abortion as a contraceptive, and less and fewer support it in general. However, there have always been exceptions. And we'll get to that. And we'll get to Cain's explanation and try to examine why it's a problem and why everybody's coming down. They're all coming down on him because they want Cain out. He's not going to go out. Nor are Americans going to throw Cain away and embrace Romney, who has embraced John Holdren, who has blah, 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 blah. We shall return. This is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I am an enemy of democracy.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Keep that in your head. Because that is the Arab Spring. That is what Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton have been fighting so hard for. Would you play that again, please, Charles? Number three.
I am an enemy of democracy.
That's it. I was mentioning earlier, Samuel Huntington's book, The Clash of Civilization, Remaking of the World Order, which in essence describes why democracy, the whole conceptual idea of our Western civilization, is antithetical to what we are about to come in conflict with. Of course, we are in conflict with it now. A lot of people said he was wrong, he made a big mistake, but he was right. And in many ways, the election that we are about to go through, and we are in 2012, is about this. It's about our understanding of what it is that we are actually facing. One, from within, with the President of the United States, who is a Marxist, although he has denied, he lied. He didn't have the guts to say, I'm a Marxist. They never do. But everybody knew, everybody in the media really knew. They just kept it a secret. In fact, and you must give them credit, because we have elected the first man as President of the United States for which we did not know what his executive experience was, and nor did anybody ever talk about it. And the only person who gave us an inkling as to who he was Daniel Ortega, good friends with a lot of progressives in the Democratic Party, who said that if he's elected president, they will be laying the foundation for real revolution in the United States. That was the only clue that we really had from a knowledgeable source, and no one bothered to ask him what he meant or how he knew. And now it's too late, because a lot of the destruction has been done. The termite has been at the foundation and the rafters, and he's done a lot of damage. And now we need the pest control company, the expert exterminators, to come in and get rid of the termites that are destroying the Constitution of the United States. It's going to be hard. It's not going to be easy. And in the spate of candidates that we have, they've kind of come and gone. There's been this, it's like, we need this white knight. Ah, he's not a white knight. We need this white knight. Ah, he's not a white knight. Now we need this white knight. Ah, this guy might be doing it. I don't know. We have all these candidates, and none of them seem to be able to carry the banner of the Republican Party, because we really are conservatives, most of us. I mean, there is the liberal branch, which we're fighting internally, but nobody wants Romney because Romney is McCain Redieu. Nobody wants that again. I think George Will called him Dukakis Redieu. and then there is Perry. And Perry came out and, you don't have a heart if you're against the Dream Act here in Texas. Ships sink. We don't need that. And we had Romney, and we had Christie, and they've all embraced John Holdren, who's nothing but an international socialist and a progressive, who believes the United States has to lower its standard of living. And Romney switched his position so many times, you don't know what he is. You just don't know. And you have Newt Gingrich, who is brilliant, and everybody wants to see him debate Barack Obama. Because we all know he'd wipe the floor up with him if he didn't say, I got to be liked. Newt's problem is he wants to be liked because they called him, because the media just attacked him so viciously. If he would get rid of that and just go out there and tear Obama up, I think, and he's tried to do, he's trying, you know, he's called him a socialist, but he ought to get a little testier. And then we have somebody that I think is a gem, and that's Herman Cain. Cain is the real deal. He's not a politician, though. And you do have to have a political savvy to answer and be prepared for the liberal questions and the gotchas that are going to come after you. And it's astonishing to see that Herman Cain got caught by the abortion issue of all issues. It just simply is unbelievable. I just put my hands in my head when that Brit asked him the questions. And then I saw him try to come back and take a few steps back and then come back into the fray to explain what he said. And he still didn't make it clear. And then this morning on Fox and Friends, he tried to deal with just the issue of misstatements because he didn't understand the right of return with the Israelis. But that's all right. Not everybody has to understand that at any point. Somebody asks you about it, you don't understand it, you look it up, you find out, you know what your values are, and you know immediately you're not going to let the Islamists overwhelm our allies, the Jews. The moment you understand what the term means, no, that's not acceptable, which is exactly what he said, because you know where his values are. He's an American, he loves the Constitution, and he recognizes an ally. And he's not an anti-Semite. He doesn't hate the Jews the way the president does. And I say that because he was with Jeremiah Wright for 20 years, who does hate the Jews. A lot of leftists hate the Jews. Stalin didn't like them. Hitler didn't like them. Yes, Hitler was a leftist. He was a socialist. They don't like Jews because they have to pick a group and hate them. The Grand Mufti in World War II was allied with Hitler. There are hundreds of imams all over the Middle East who hate the Jews. The Jews are a target. And anybody else who aligns themselves with these anti-Semites, these hateful individuals, are all in the same boat. They can't stand on their own two feet unless they're hating somebody else. So, Cain's attempting to ameliorate the situation. And this is probably his, right now, this is probably his weak spot. His lack of practice in the, why is this guy asking me this question this way? And playing the chess game, looking down the line. So first of all, I want to play Cain's Uber statement about his misstatements this morning on Fox and Friends. This is number 13, Charles, please.
Find a perfect candidate or a perfect person who will not, at points in time in a presidential campaign, not make a misstatement. If something is taken out of context, I would be happy to explain the context in which it was taken out of and also explain what I meant. That's what you can believe about Herman Cain.
All right. Now, that's his Uber comment. You know, misstatements are made, and I've made them, but I will put things in context. Now, let's go to the explanation that got him into so much trouble. And I hate the idea that we're talking about abortion. I mean, I thought that this was not going to be a part of this campaign, but I was foolish. I was naive. I knew that CNN and the Brit over there, the ugly Brit, with six cell phones and 400 scribbled names on them, talking through his backside, would bring out this question. And Cain got all screwed up with it. And here's his explanation and his explanation of the explanation and why it was a bad explanation. Number 10, please.
The reporter was trying to pigeonhole me on, but what if it's your daughter or your granddaughter and you're in one of these situations that is a life or death situation, life of the mother, life of the child, and on and on and on. And I simply said, if you get pushed to that extent, the family isn't going to be thinking about what the laws are at that point. They're going to be thinking about that family member, that baby. That's what I mean by it was taken out of context. There's no uncertainty, Gretchen. I'm pro-life, period.
Now, he's absolutely right. But he still says it badly. I don't particularly find this a problem. This is why. When you look at the abortion issue and you look at Roe versus Wade, very bad law, just terrible law, and everybody, even liberals now agree that it was something that should not have been decided by the Supreme Court of the United States. Should not have been. Should have been a state's issue. Shouldn't have been in front of judges. And I think everybody agrees with that. And I think Cain was basically saying that government shouldn't be in there. But then he says it should be illegal. You can't if you're going to say something's illegal, and that's something he's got to live with. And there are people who believe that all abortions should be illegal. There aren't many, however, who believe that all abortions should be illegal. I have never asked a man, and I put this to you. And if you have an answer for this, I want you to call. Telephone number here, 1-800-449-8255. I have never put this to a man. A doctor has come to you, your wife is pregnant, and the doctor says, if the baby comes to term, your wife is going to die. So it's either the baby or your wife. Who lives? I have never, ever asked a man that question where the man said, the baby. Never. Ever. In all of my years, never. And in essence, that really is the substance of what Cain is saying. That if I'm in a situation in which my daughter's going to die or my wife is going to die, I'm going to make the decision. I'm going to make the decision for the life that's in front of me. Abortion is a contraceptive, which is so repugnant as to be indescribable, to have reached the point where we have partial birth abortion. Abortion on demand. All of these phrases that have come into the public lexicon because it is just that. Abortion. Alice, I want to have an abortion. Don't worry. I can get pregnant. The horror of an abortion, the trauma that the mother goes through if the mother lives. All of this is too serious to become political fodder so that somebody will be thrown out of a presidential race. And I say that this is something Kane is going to have to, he is going to have to do better than what he's done. And he can do better. You cannot, but you have to be, you cannot just think that you're going to face the liberal media who want you dead and get away with it just with a smile and your good nature and your intelligence. You may be a great mathematician, but you better have an answer for the abortion question. You better have an answer for global warming. You better have an answer, and of course there are tons, about the golden eagle and the bald eagle and clean water. You better have an answer ready on the tip of your tongue or you won't make it. It'll go to somebody else. This is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
And this is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. And I want to go to a caller, Sam in Sacramento. You are on the Savage Nation, Sam.
Yes, I was just telling the screener that I have had that scenario that has happened with where two of my cousins, which were brothers, their mother died at childbirth having them. And I'm very pro-life. I'm the son of a late Christian Southern Hellfire and Brimstone pastor. And I believe that what Mr. Pat Buchanan said not too long ago in his book, Suicide of a Superpower, is that there's pretty soon it's not going to be anything that bond us together. And I believe that the political agenda has divided us as a nation over this abortion issue.
You're absolutely right. I mean, no, but as to the question that I posed, if you were told by a doctor that your wife would die if the baby was born, and it was your decision, what would you do?
Sir, what I would do is, I would go for the innocence of life. I would go for the innocence of life. I would hope that me and my wife would have enough. We would have a relationship enough. But I believe that my wife would choose the children over herself. That's part of being a mother, to sacrifice yourself for your children. It is no different than if you are on an airplane that crashes and they can't rescue all of you, and you choose to have your children to go, than yourself.
Well, I don't see that analogy. That makes no sense to me. You just abrogated your responsibility and put it on the mother. And therefore, I will say to you, and thank you for your call. You see, ladies and gentlemen, you saw what he did. He would hope that his wife would choose. That's what happens here. This is. He could not say, I would choose. He would hope that he would have a relationship with his wife and that his wife would choose. You see, in the moment, when the question is asked, in reality, no one ever answers, yes, I want my wife to die, I want the baby born. It doesn't happen. And if it does happen, you then take it to the next step. Which is, then the child dies too. You're making a decision for a potential life as opposed to life now. This is ridiculous. And I'm so glad that he did exactly what he did. Because and there's no point in getting into an argument about it, and I could question him 100 times, but you heard what he said. Oh, I want her to make the decision. Responsibility is an amazing thing. I would just say this. I just, when you're talking about present life, someone that you love and you share, who potentially can have another child, but whatever the problem is that is causing, that would potentially cause the death of the mother, and maybe she could never have any more children. But present life, to terminate it, is, I just don't, I, Personally, I've never had anybody say they would terminate the wife's life. Nor have I ever heard anything but the most fundamentalist religious ideologue say that the mother must die and the child must live. Never. And usually you get into didactic arguments that follow not along human lines. And this is why we get into this problem. This is why we have abortion on demand. The old coat hanger in the back alley routine was a nightmare. Anybody who denied a medical procedure because a woman was going to die. Now, I'll say this. Many of those back alley coat hanger abortions were, in essence, contraceptive in nature. They had nothing to do with life. It had to do with shame, which we don't have anymore. So we are in a moral dilemma today. And Herman Cain got hooked up in the politics of moral dilemmas because he wasn't prepared to answer a question. It could be serious for his presidential campaign. I hope not. I hope he becomes better prepared day by day and hires the right people to throw the questions at him that he needs to have in his mind, because it's going to be tough if he doesn't. This is Schultz sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.